Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so today we're going to be talking about one of the key components to helping students reach their creative potential, and it's this idea of play. And I want to start out with a quick little story. It's supposed to snow this week. And it reminds me of this moment about 4 years ago when it snowed here in Oregon. Now, we were from Phoenix, which meant our children had experienced basically two seasons, and one was blazingly hot, the other one was nice. That was it. The only thing that ever changed color in the fall were the license plates of the people who were ditching this thing called snow, which we were about to discover in Oregon. Now, when we first moved here, people told us that it doesn't snow much, and that's pretty accurate. I mean, it barely snowed a little bit last year, and I don't think it snowed at all the year before. And while that tends to be true, this first year, we didn't experience a light dusting. It was more like this giant dump of icy flakes. Now, we had four snowstorms where the snow actually stuck to the ground, and I began to learn all about things like tire chains and snow shovels and things that I just didn't think that I would have to learn about. And while the snow lasted, my kids played in it all the time. They walked away from their devices, and they simply played. They made snowmen and snow women, snow zombies, snow ninjas, a snow artist named Bob Frost, who paints happy little trees, of course, in the snow. They had snowball fights, and they went sledding down the road. In other words, they played often. But then a few days later, my son wanted to know what chemicals would melt the snow the best. And because the snow was still stuck in the ground, we were able to test it out. We tried salt and vinegar, which I'm pretty sure is salad dressing. We tried out body wash, which was probably not a good idea. And we used rubbing alcohol. You get the idea. To our surprise, the rubbing alcohol actually worked the best. We really thought it would be salt. But it wasn't. It was the rubbing alcohol. And later that day, my son had the idea of making a windshield defrosting liquid made out of water and rubbing alcohol. The reason being that at the time he was in the sixth grade, and we would often go to school early in the morning. He wanted to go there where there was an open gym. And, you know, if the windshield was icy, he had to wait longer. Now, I get it. This is not the most original idea, but it was original to him. It wasn't the biggest act of creativity, but it was something that helped him develop his creative thinking skills. And I mention this because it, for me, was this reminder of the power of play. This is why I will call a personal snow day this week, if it snows at all. I am determined to make sure my kids get a chance to play in it. And I want them to make those snow creatures again and go sledding and walk around in the eerie silence that occurs when there are no vehicles around. I want them to run laps with the dogs. And that's always a blast if you watch our dogs. They love the snow, especially our greyhound. And I want them to get into snowball fights with me. And I want them to play in the snow. I get it. They're older now. And my son, oldest son is now a sophomore in high school. But it doesn't matter to me. This is what I think would be best. I am convinced that a full day of playing in the snow will be a more valuable learning experience than a full day of Zoom meetings. Now, don't get me wrong, I support virtual learning. We talk about that often on this podcast. I share strategies and ideas. I lead professional development on this. I think that Zoom meetings can be highly interactive. And teachers are doing a phenomenal job making the learning relevant in distance learning. But as a teacher, I'm also convinced that deep learning occurs on snow days. These are the moments that stir up a sense of curiosity and wonder. And I mention this because I think there's a lot of benefits to play. Now, last week, I interviewed my friend Jed Derryberry, and he's the author, or co-author, I should say, of The Playful Classroom. And that book is phenomenal. It's one of my favorite education books that's come out in the last few years. And I'll be sharing the interview this week on my next podcast episode. So we're going to have this podcast episode, and then the follow-up is going to actually be that interview with him. But, you know, he talks in this book, along with Julie, his co-author, about the benefits of play. And it's that play sparks curiosity and wonder. Play helps students think divergently. It helps them make connections between ideas. It allows them, students, to be more open to new ideas. And play has benefits in terms of social and emotional learning and just personal well-being. Play can help students develop empathy, which has benefits on a personal and social level, but is also a vital aspect to design thinking and creativity. Play can teach students how to collaborate and cooperate with one another. It can lead to increased student engagement, and that can actually lead to increases in student achievement. It can help develop a positive classroom culture where students feel a sense of belonging. Again, if you haven't checked out The Playful Classroom, I highly recommend it. But one of the big key takeaways for me was the notion that play is vital for all ages, including higher education where I teach. It's easy to forget this reality, but we can all benefit from being more playful. And one of the things I love about the book is that they expand play beyond merely the behavior of play and into this idea of the mindset of play. It has to do with being curious and creative, and play can involve collecting things and having an imagination and a lot of things that go beyond the typical behavior of a play. It's not necessarily just like, oh, you've got toys out and you're playing together. It has to do with your approach to how you solve problems or your approach to how you research and find things. And as I read this book and got that bigger, more expansive definition of play, I was struck by the fact that it is so incredibly vital that students maintain that playfulness in their mindset. And I think there's often this connection between play and curiosity and creativity. See, curiosity often leads to creativity. After playing in the snow, my son became curious. That led to experimentation and ultimately led to creativity. I mention this because I often hear people say that creativity has to start with a real-world problem, or they say you have to start with empathy with an audience, right? And that's often true. I will often say great design begins with empathy, or I will talk about the need to teach problem-solving skills, but sometimes creative work simply begins with play. You play around with the natural environment, and that slack and flexibility leads to curiosity, which leads to creativity, and it happens all the time. You can think about it as this cycle where you have play leading to curiosity, that leads to experimentation, which then leads to the creative work that students do, and then that, as they create and make, leads to deeper play, more curiosity, more experimentation, and it's an ongoing cycle that occurs. What begins as play turns into natural wonder and curiosity, experimentation, and then making. Unfortunately, school isn't always set up this way. Often we have packed curriculum maps, and that leads to these hurried lessons. We have pacing guides that feel overwhelming, and there's this obsession with benchmark tests that push play to the sidelines. In the past, I've seen students pulled away from recess so that they can have more one-on-one reading and math intervention time. And to me, that is tragic. Play too often becomes one of those if we get around to it activities. But play is vital for curiosity and creativity. It's actually not necessarily something you add to your schedule and do. It's more about the way that you do the things that you do. In other words, you can incorporate play into your warm-ups, into your questions, into your classroom culture, and it doesn't have to take up more time. In fact, I would argue that some of the most playful classrooms are the ones where students are working hard and they've developed this positive classroom culture, and that increased engagement actually leads to more work and better work. So I really believe that there is power in incorporating play into our everyday classroom experiences. So how do we integrate play into our schools? Well, there's a couple ideas. And when I say a couple, I actually don't mean, you know, two, I mean nine. So here are nine different ideas. Number one, bring back recess. I know this is simple, but it's actually one of the most powerful answers. Let them have longer, unstructured time to play. I once observed a school that had an extra 15-minute recess every day. The teachers worried that students would be less productive, but the recess actually created this sort of jumpstart for their work later on in the day. Now, this 15-minute recess, you might be imagining like first graders or second graders, but this was actually a middle school. This was a middle school where they said, we are going to have lunch and recess both every single day. We're going to have a recess time for students. And although it seemed odd, it was highly effective to have this later in the day recess that then allowed students to play and be active and have unstructured playtime and social time and then come back and be energized for the afternoon. Number two, rethink our assessment practices. If we cut out some of the time spent practicing how to take tests, we would have more flexible school days. This would allow for more play. So maybe we don't need to have so many practice tests. Maybe we don't need to have so much test prep. But we could also rethink our approach to assessment so that we can actually focus on the playful elements of learning, including things like open-mindedness or creative risk-taking. In other words, we can help students engage in self-assessment and peer assessment in a way that is low risk and even playful. Again, I highly recommend that you think about how play is much bigger than just, you know, playing with a toy, right? It is a broader definition, and I can't say it enough that The Playful Classroom is a phenomenal book in terms of how it defines play as bigger than just that singular behavior. Number three, incorporate game-based learning. I've written about this before. I've talked about it in this podcast, but you might use a game or simulation to teach a difficult concept. And I'm not referring to Pictionary or word searches. I'm thinking more about deeply immersive, imaginative games where students can think deeply about the subject and gain a sense of empathy as they, you know, take on the role of different characters and things like that. And so there's a lot of different ways to do this, but it can help students learn concepts and systems and the complexity of those concepts and systems. So I really love this idea of piloting a game-based learning activity. Fourth idea is a divergent thinking challenge. This is a different type of play. This is where you give students a few different objects and you have them create something, and that pushes the divergent thinking that is so common in play. One of my favorite options, and you've probably heard me mention this before if you listen to this podcast, is doing a scavenger hunt and then using those items that you find in the scavenger hunt as sort of a creative constraint to then design something new. Fifth idea is follow the questions. One of the things that you'll notice about play is there's a lot of inquiry, there's a lot of questions, there's a lot of exploration. And so try something like a Wonder Day project or a Wonder Week project and allow students to pursue their questions and chase their curiosity. And that itself becomes very playful. It doesn't matter if it's shallow, or it doesn't matter if it seems silly or ridiculous. What I found is that the play actually allows us to think deeply when we begin from a place that may initially seem shallow. Like you might have some questions and you're thinking about it and then you're not taking it very seriously. And then you get into it and you dive into it. And then eventually you become very knowledgeable about this area that you began with just an initial curiosity in. And it sometimes becomes the very skills that students need for the rest of their life. So, you know, let them chase their questions, and that itself is playful. Sixth idea is to create moments of joy. I love, there's a great TED Talk from Dean Shoresky that talks about, you know, classrooms should be places of joy, not as a means to an end, but as an end in itself. As a teacher, you can plan out things that create a climate of joy. You can laugh, you can have many challenges, you can play games, you can develop fun rituals. And in the process, you create a more play-like classroom culture. I've written before about how humor can lead to creativity in the classroom. And I think there's a lot of overlap between humor and play. For example, you might have inside jokes. We had a roller coaster in our classroom, and it was basically just like a drink coaster, and then we duct taped a Lego wheel at the bottom. It was the worst object humor dad joke ever, but it grew into a legend where people would talk about the roller coaster that we have in our classroom, and oh my gosh, it's a functioning roller coaster that actually works. We had a rule that if you said share a link, someone had to send you a link to a share video. I often drew a visual pun, a joke of the day, and these goofy dad jokes would make their way through the classroom, right? So you had like two things of milk. One said soy milk, the other one said yo también, right? Stuff like that. And if you're not someone that wants to generate all of these, go find jokes online. Go find memes online and put them on your learning management system. Add them to your slideshow. Those little things create a culture of joy. Seventh idea, play with your subjects. Years ago, Dan Meyer shared about having his students do a what can you do with this project in or assignment, I should say, in math. And they would have to develop math problems based on a scenario, typically a visual, a picture, or a video. And I love this concept of treating math like a playground, because so many students are risk averse in math, they have math anxiety, they're nervous about it. And this was a chance to basically say, no, we're gonna treat math as something playful. And similarly in language arts, I have a lot of really goofy video writing prompts that I have. You can check them out at, if you go to my website at spencerauthor.com, you know, one of the free downloads that you can get there and you can check it out is all of these video writing prompts. I have a lot of them in a playlist that's on my YouTube channel. So if you go to spencervideos.com, you'll see them. And they are playful. They are goofy. It's like create a to-do list for a villain, for example, or you've been shrunk and tell the story of being shrunk inside of your school. And all of this allows for deeper creativity, but is also inherently playful. Number eight, allow for mistakes. The term grit has become really popular, and often these conversations are all about raising standards and toughening up and persevering. But I've noticed that students persevere when there's a lot of slack. That actually, you can't have grit if you don't have slack. They internalize the need or the freedom to mess up and to grow and improve. In other words, they'll persevere when they have a chance to play. And so I would say that allowing for mistakes in how you grade and how you teach in the classroom culture you have actually helps develop a deeper sense of play in your environment. And then the last idea is to use play as a form of social emotional learning. I've seen teachers use humorous and fun examples for student check-ins, including like there's an example I love of a how are you doing today, and it has every meme of Nicolas Cage. Other teachers have done collaborative games. Each semester I do a check-in with my students by having them do a show and tell activity representing, you know, how they're handling the semester or what activity they're into when they feel stressed. Things like that become conversation starters and a chance to share who you are as a person with your classmates. And all of these ideas can help students experience this sense of belonging in their community while also processing how they're doing socially and emotionally. Now, I know that this is not always easy. Sometimes the system requires us to just push play to the sidelines. But I really believe that when teachers boldly choose to integrate play, students grow more curious. They learn to ask better questions. They thrive. They experiment with ideas. They become problem solvers and deeper thinkers, and they learn how to collaborate. So even though play might seem silly, it's actually quite serious, because in the end, it is vital for the creative life. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you like it, would you leave a review on iTunes, or I guess it's Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast? Again, thanks for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.